This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio, heard weekdays from noon to one. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio, heard weekdays from noon to one. Now, Fight Back with Libby Znaimer on Zoomer Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome. And we are talking about assisted dying today and whether the Liberal government is getting it right. That proposed legislation is on the table now. I'm going to give you the numbers and a reminder, callers, please call early in the show because we always end up getting backed up with calls right when we have to take breaks or end the show. So the numbers, and we're talking about assisted dying today, 416-360-0740 or toll free 1-866-740-4740. And it is supposed to be the Chamber of Sober Second Thought. And yesterday, Maureen Taylor, widow of SARS hero Dr. Donald Lowe, appealed to the Senate to exercise its constitutional right to change the proposed legislation on assisted dying. It was an emotional appeal from Taylor, who has taken up the cause after her husband's experience. He starved himself to death to end his suffering from brain cancer, and he left behind an impassioned video that I'm sure most of you have heard that ignited the debate on this issue. Maureen told the senators that they are the last hope of people who are suffering intolerably but won't qualify for an assisted death under the proposed new law, which would require a person's natural death to be, quote, reasonably foreseeable. Maureen is on the line from Michael Garron Hospital, where she works as a physician assistant in infectious diseases. Hi, Maureen. How are you?
Hi, Libby. I'm fine. Thanks.
Thank you so much for taking the time to join us today. Tell us about your experience before the Senate. First of all, what made you go that route?
They invited me. So that was something they did because I was the co-chair of the provincial territorial panel that looked at all of this, and our report came out last December. That was an invitation, you know, basically on the basis of that. But, you know, as I watched everybody coming before them this week, I'm a geek, so I sort of watched it on C-SPAN, it felt like they were hearing from all of the same people that, in groups, basically, that we'd all heard from all along. And there really weren't that many patient voices coming forward. So with my co-chair's permission yesterday when I got there, I said, I'm not going to talk to you as the co-chair of this panel. I just want to talk to you as the widow of someone who wanted an assisted death and didn't get it. And so, yeah, I did try to bring them back into, you know, that time where Dawn was desperately trying to find a way to have a peaceful, quick death and couldn't. And I hope it had an effect because, really, it looks like Bill C-14 is not going to get any amendments unless the Senate can convince the government otherwise.
And would your husband have qualified under this current proposed legislation?
You know, Libby, I think he would. I think it would be a very odd oncologist who would have looked at his MRIs and things and said, your death is not reasonably foreseeable. So yes, I could, you know, I could be that person who says, okay, my, you know, the person I loved would have been taken care of with this bill, and then I'm happy, I'm going to go home and say nice things about Justin Trudeau. But in fact, the more I've researched this, the more I realize that there are so many other medical conditions for which doctors can't say when you'll die. And, you know, you've probably heard that Kay Carter, for whom the Supreme Court decision is named, is one of those people. She had spinal stenosis. It caused her to be basically an ironing board in bed all day, unable to move and in great pain. But it would not have killed her in the next 3, 4, 5 years. Who knows? And I'll put some other ones out there because I'm sure the listeners have these types of people who they love and are in their families. So we're talking Alzheimer's disease, multiple sclerosis, even Huntington's, Parkinson's disease. Those are all things for which it's very difficult to say your death is reasonably foreseeable, although you might be having intolerable suffering well ahead of that death.
Mm-hmm. And there was another objection this week to the proposed legislation, and that was that in certain rural communities, the requirement that it be two doctors who are unaffiliated might prevent people from getting an assisted death, because in some small communities, there is only one unit of practice, mm-hmm. so the doctors are affiliated.
I found that. That came from the College of Physicians and Surgeons of Ontario, and I, my hats are off to them. I had not actually anticipated that as a problem. Of course, the reason the government is putting that in is it's a safeguard to prevent, sort of two doctors who have a business together from just rubber stamping each other's evaluations of patients, right? But the CPSO made a very good point that in a family health team, all of these doctors, and that might be the only team in a whole rural area. So these doctors have a relationship, a business relationship, and if they're prevented from seeing each other's patients who want an assisted death, that will mean the patient has to go outside that community. So I do think that has to be taken into consideration. They've raised a very good point there.
And was there any indication that might be taken into consideration?
It never came up in the Senate. You're asking me how seriously did they take that? I'm not sure, because the CPSO brought that up the day before my presentation, and so it wasn't really brought up again yesterday when I was there.
And your sense of the Senate, we know that Senator Oliphant said he was not going to support the bill, but take us through the process. Can they suggest an amendment, or do they just reject the bill?
Yeah, I know that we've been, we don't have a very high opinion of the Senate lately, but this is one thing the Senate does very well, is they have these committees that look over proposed government bills, and they study them in great detail, and they can send them back with suggested changes. So the committee I was appearing before, the one that's looking at this, is actually the committee, that Senate Committee on the Constitution and Legal Affairs. So these senators have a fair bit of knowledge of our Constitution and the Criminal Code, the Charter of Rights and Freedoms. So they could go to the government, and there is a conspiracy theory out there that says the Liberals want the senators to make these changes, so then they'll be able to say to the masses, hey, we tried to make this a very narrow bill that only terminally ill people would qualify, but the Senate didn't want that, so our hands are sort of tied. I don't know if I believe that. So the Senate can
conspiracy theory for everything.
Yes. The Senate can make suggestions, and then I guess it's up to the government whether they accept them or not.
Okay, Maureen, let's take a call. We've got Laurie in Toronto. Hi, Laurie.
Yes, hi. How are you?
Fine. How are you?
Not too bad, thank you. Thank you for taking my call. I have a question with regards to this whole situation about death and dying. Actually, I have several questions, and I also have some expressions to make. The question is, do we have statistics on how many people would like to have assisted death?
Okay, good question. We know from other jurisdictions that have had assisted dying laws for some time, like Oregon and the Netherlands, that it's anywhere between 0.5 and I think 0.2% of the population. So it's a very small number of people. And the other thing to note, in Oregon, where they've looked at this, one-third of people who ask their doctor for the prescription for the medicines, and they qualify, they meet all the criteria, they take the prescription home and they never use it. So one-third of all of them never even use it. And that's because palliative care is enough, or they die more suddenly. So I think that's reassuring, too. It's really going to be, across all of Canada in a year, it's going to be a few thousand. I estimate, though, to be honest with you, that at the beginning, there's going to be more than that, because I think there's a pent-up demand in Canada for this. There are people suffering who are just waiting for June 6th to come around. So I wouldn't be alarmed if we see more than expected at the beginning, but I think that will taper off into something around that 0.2%.
And Laurie, what they say in Oregon is that that people just feel a lot better knowing that they have the option if the pain becomes unbearable. But the law here is very different. In Oregon, you have to be able to take the pills yourself. Here it's physician-assisted death. So I'm assuming that by the time, you could always change your mind, but by the time people go through the process, there wouldn't be, you know, it wouldn't be a third of people who don't go through with it.
Perhaps not, although in this bill, you have to ask the patient just before delivering the drugs if they want to change their mind. So that's all built in as a safeguard as well.
Okay, so if statistically we have such a low percentage of people who want to have assisted mm-hmm. death, why do we have to go in such measures as having a bill? I guess this is one question. And another question is, if somebody wants to die, do they have to have a permission of the doctor to die? People have all kinds of modes of being able to go to the other side. They don't need a prescription. They don't need a permission. It's their own choice. There were always throughout the centuries people found ways of dying peacefully or otherwise.
Let me ask you that. If it was your husband instead of mine, how should he have died without a prescription of barbiturates? What would your suggestion have been?
Well, there are plenty of drugs on the market, over the counter drugs
that kill you within 10 or 15 minutes without
vomiting pills, etc. That would allow someone to just take more than allowed amount or number of pills and just die.
Okay,
and
so I'll just have
to... So I don't understand. I don't understand the reason for the legislation.
Let her explain.
To allow, because there is no such thing as somebody need a permission.
Yeah. Well, why don't you let Maureen explain? And there are a lot of people who, with a disease like ALS, if they don't have someone assist them, they would commit suicide or they would take their lives sooner than they have to because they wouldn't be able to physically move. But Maureen, please go ahead and explain.
Well, I worked in emergency medicine before coming over to infectious diseases, and I can assure you that I saw patients on almost a daily basis who had tried to overdose with sleeping pills, and I only chuckled because I think these were half-hearted attempts at suicide. You will vomit up the pills or even the Tylenol. Now, Tylenol, you might have a better chance because it does serious damage to the liver. But sleeping pills will not kill you if somebody finds you in time. And that's always the thing, too. My husband wanted a peaceful death within minutes, and he didn't want me to have to come home and find him in a violent situation where he'd blown his brains out or hung himself. And so I'm afraid the caller is just wrong. There are not many, many ways of killing yourself in a peaceful, quick way. It's inhumane to make people attempt to do their own chemistry in the drugstore when we have an alternative like they do in Oregon. And that's all I'll say about that.
Lori, does that answer your question?
Well, partly it does. It's just the whole situation with regard to the fact that people actually want to die, for me, and I'm sure for many, many people, is very alarming that people are losing the hope and they're losing the will to live, because all our existence is about trying to survive. We were always encouraged by the societies and by the media and by the whole motion of life that we have to fight for our lives and that it's very important to survive.
Yeah.
And if we see that there's such a degradation in people's mentality and their physical being that they actually want to die and they actually are asking for assisted death, for me this is a huge turn of us as humans, of our wills and of our abilities to actually allow people to live happy lives.
Okay, Lori, thanks for your call. Thank you. Those things are human, but anybody who has gone through a terminal illness with anyone else will know that there comes a point when the best that you can hope for is a good death. Mm-hmm. A disease like your husband had brain cancer in the fourth stage, It only ends one way.
Right. It didn't matter whether he had a will to live or not. I can assure you he was going to die anyway. And in fact, he did. I mean, he didn't get an assisted death, and he died. 7 months was all he had from the time of diagnosis. So, I don't like this this analogy that we use in cancer to say, "Oh, you're fighting your cancer. You're fighting your
cancer." I hate it too.
Okay, good. We agree on that.
We agree on that. And I've had two kinds of cancer. So, So terminal diseases. Huntington's disease, I mean, there comes a point you do whatever you can, and there are diseases where really, it's going to be final. And it's interesting that when you talk about doctors, they are kind of the most sanguine because they really know what's going to happen.
Right. They know how futile many of these treatments can be, and they know what death is like. Death is often not pretty. I'm almost unhappy as I get older that I don't smoke and that I'm not a walking heart attack possibility, because when you look back, that's how my grandfathers all died, it seemed, and that was probably a very painless, quick death, but not many of us die that way anymore. We have prolonged, protracted deaths, and doctors know this better than anyone.
Okay, Maureen, please hold on. We have to take a quick break, and we are going to take more of your calls when we come back from the break. So let me give the numbers out once again. 416-360-0740 or toll-free 1-866-744-740. Back after this.
You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio. Heard weekdays from noon to 1. Fight Back with Libby Znaimer on Zoomer Radio.
Welcome back. We are talking about the proposed legislation on assisted dying. We're here with Maureen Taylor, the widow of Dr. Donald Lowe, an impassioned advocate. He was the hero of the SARS crisis, and he ended up starving himself to death to end his suffering from brain cancer. And that was obviously a death that involved quite a lot of suffering. Before we get to your calls, I have a question for you, Maureen. You've explained why you want to change the wording in the bill, the naturally foreseeable death, because mm-hmm. doctors are not gods and they mm-hmm. don't necessarily know. But why do you want to get rid of the word incurable? Shouldn't it have to be an incurable disease?
I think what I liked about the Supreme Court wording is they said it has to be irremediable, but the patient doesn't have to try every treatment that isn't acceptable to the patient, or something to that effect. Do you remember that? So I think that, as you know, in the cancer journey, Libby, oncologists have a lot of tools in their armamentarium, and sometimes they warn you right off the bat, the first round of chemo, that might not do it. There might be a second round, then there might be an experimental type of chemo we can go to, and a keen oncologist may well never agree that the patient's cancer is incurable until they've tried God knows how many treatments. And we just want to make sure that the wording is in there that says, yes, this has to be an irreversible disease, something that can't, that can't be reversed. But at the same time, the treatments and the number of them, that has to be up to the patient to the patient.
I thought that all stage 4 cancer is considered incurable.
Very probably, but sometimes people die even with stage 2 cancer or stage 3 cancer, right?
Yep.
And so we have very elderly people who are getting diagnosed with, breast cancer at age 85, and they just say, you know what, I don't care. I don't want to go through a mastectomy and chemo and radiation. And that's my, I have these other comorbidities. I have, CHF or something. And I think that should be their choice, right? But could you say that their breast cancer is not curable? You couldn't.
I get what you mean now.
Yeah.
Let's take a call from Anne in Toronto. Hi, Anne.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi. I didn't realize that Maureen wasn't a physician the way she was talking. I thought she was a physician, but the screener corrected me.
She's a physician assistant, and she knows a lot about this.
Okay. Yeah. Well, okay. I won't get into that one. I wanted to know from Maureen what she would think a suitable fee would be to kill someone.
Well, I'm not going to engage in that. You know, obviously you're not, you disagree with the Supreme Court decision, and I...
You're inferring things, Maureen. You don't know if I agree or not.
Well, I have no idea what the government may set as a fee for this, so I don't have an opinion on that.
Well, you have a lot of other opinions, and I have some difficulty. If you were a physician, I would be able to listen to you. But you are not.
Yeah, but she has firsthand experience
so
watching.
And so do many other people.
I'm really here to comment because I went through this. So I'm talking for the patient and caregiver voice here, not as a physician in the medical
community. I'm talking for a patient
community.
And caregiver.
So you would not have to have this. If you didn't want this, obviously we would always respect the right of people to let their natural death occur.
Well, not from listening to you.
Well, that, what do you, no, no, this is for people who want this. This is, this is something, as Maureen explained, for a very small number of people who want help dying, who want to end their suffering, and who understand that their condition is terminal and that it's very painful. And to put this forward as anything other than that is just inaccurate. I mean, if you don't, I understand it is a very divisive moral issue, and that's why we're talking about it. But it is what it is, and it's not a question of forcing anyone to end their life.
But Maureen, it shouldn't be easy for anyone to do it. And listening to you, you're trying to make it very, very easy to have someone die if they have an illness which is deemed incurable. And we never know that. We've heard of miracles, right?
Well not many miracles.
Maureen, I would reflect on the way you're presenting your position.
Okay, Anne, thanks for your call.
Thank you.
Okay, Maureen, we're out of time, but maybe a last response to that.
Well, I want to assure Anne and others that I don't think it should ever be easy, and I don't think this will ever be easy. You know, even if Don was entering his cancer journey after January 6th, and you know, we ended up in the same place, but he had an assisted death, I can assure you that would not have been easy for me either. But his death was not ever going to be easy for me because I loved him so much, and I didn't want him to go. I could have looked after him forever, but I loved him enough to not want to see him suffer, and I respected his wishes. And that's all I would ask of people, is that we respect each other's point of view on this. And as you said, this is something patients and only patients can ask for. And there will only be a few people wanting this because your other caller was right. Most of the time, people want to eke out every single day of life. But that's just not true for everyone.
Okay, Maureen. And I understand also that you're continuing your husband's cause and his wish, and that it's probably not very easy for you either.
Not always, but, you know, I wanted to try to make a difference so that other families wouldn't have to go through what we did. And I'm heartened to see, you know, for all the faults of Bill C-14, I am overwhelmingly happy that we're going to have something in place soon.
Okay, Maureen Taylor, thank you so much for joining us.
Nice to talk to you, Libby. Thank you.
You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio. Heard weekdays from noon to one. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio. Heard weekdays from noon to one. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio. Heard weekdays from noon to one. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio. Heard weekdays from noon to one.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.